Can you imagine having the power to just move your hands one way or another and have time fly by? I mean, it would be an amazing feat, don't you think? Be able to take yourself to different places in history, to watch time just fly by like that. Well, I've got some news for you. In case you didn't know it, time is flying by. And the older I get, the truer that statement becomes. Today's is October 20th. I'm still trying to figure out where September went. Anybody with me? I mean, it just seems like summer was coming to a close, and all of a sudden, it's like almost Thanksgiving. Today, my kids are 32 years of age and 33. I have three kids, twins at 33, Gretchen at 32. I'm just telling you, it seems like it was yesterday when they were born. My wife and I got married 38 and a half years ago. That seems like the day before yesterday. I mean, there are just a whole bunch of events in my life that feel like they took place in the last couple of weeks. But when I look in the mirror and I see that gray, bald-headed guy looking back at me, I'm understanding that something's happened. Time has gone someplace. But to be completely transparent, I've got to tell you that there are some things in my life where time is not flying by. It's kind of a weird phenomenon. There are moments and it just seems like it's racing, and there are other things that it just feels like it's barely moving at all. It's kind of like a little kid. I remember being, you know, the days and the weeks before Christmas. It just seemed like it was forever to get to Christmas Day. On Christmas Eve, our family would go to, in California, we would go to my dad's side of the family in the evening. And I can remember waking up on Christmas Eve morning. And from the time the morning came to the time we were getting in the car in the late afternoon to drive into Linwood, Compton, where my dad's family lived, I mean, it felt like 4 years had gone by. Typically, when time is not flying by, it's because it has to do with painful events. My dad died, it'll be 8 years ago at Thanksgiving. And there are moments when it feels like it's 30 years. This Christmas will be 15 years since my mom died, and 16 years. And there are moments when it feels like it was forever ago. In those instances, time is just dragging along. As we move to chapter 40 of the book of Genesis, 11 years has passed from when we started the story in Genesis 37. Chapter 37, we're told that Joseph was 17 years old. 17 years old when we're learning about the bad blood that existed between Joseph and his brothers. And then that caravan came along and his brothers sold him into the hands of these Ishmaelites. And then they took him down to Egypt. In a few short verses from chapter 37 into chapter 40, 11 years has flown by. And I would suggest to you, as we're reading it, it's hard to believe that that's 11 years. But I would also suggest to you that in Joseph's time frame, that 11 years felt like an eternity. It leads me to say a few things. A few things I want you to write down. And I just want to begin by saying, with Joseph, it was the same old thing. His life situation just kept getting worse. He was going from bad to worse, from worse to worser, if that's even a word. I mean, have you ever had a string of events in your life that moved that way, went from worse to worse to worse? You find yourself in a corner someplace, like with your hands raised, crying out to God, pleading with God to help you wake up from the nightmare, to let it be over. That would have been Joseph, I think. Joseph's life just kept getting worse. In chapter 37, he's hated for nothing that he had done. In chapter 37, a few verses later, he's sold to Ishmaelites. A few verses later, the Ishmaelites sell him to Potiphar. Now he's in slavery. A few verses later, in chapter 39, he's falsely accused of rape, and he's thrown into prison. 11 years has passed, and there's no light at the end of the tunnel. Can you imagine that? Bad circumstance follows bad circumstance. Bad circumstance follows worse circumstance. And to add insult to injury, Joseph was completely innocent of everything he's accused of. He's done nothing to receive the treatment that he's getting. For most people, when trouble comes along, they tend to allow the dark side of their personality to take over. It might be anger, it might be bitterness, hostility, rage, lashing out, abuse. But interestingly, that's not how Joseph responded. In fact, his response would be exactly the opposite. Two things stand out here in my mind. First of all, Joseph decided to bloom where he was planted. Because of all that had befallen him, we might expect him to be angry or hostile, like this untamable young man who's just going crazy wherever he is. But instead, Joseph determined to respond in every circumstance with grace, love, forgiveness, hard work. Potiphar's house, here's what it says. Joseph found favor in his eyes, in Potiphar's eyes, and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. It's a couple of verses later, he's in jail. Same thing, same old, Genesis 39, 22. The warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. Joseph's decision was not to be angry, not to be hostile, not to be going crazy. His decision was to bloom where he was planted. It didn't matter what his circumstance was. He determined that he was going to do his best to serve the Lord. He was planted, even in a jail cell, he would bloom. And there's a huge lesson here for all of us, a lesson that all of us need to think about, and I would encourage you, a lesson that we all need to contemplate. And I'd encourage you to really take some time this next week to determine how you are using your everyday circumstance to lift up the name of the Lord. And as you're thinking about that, there's one more thing I want you to see here, that God is moving. And as God is moving, God is preparing this young man. He's using the circumstance of his life to prepare him, to train this young man. In a few years, Joseph is going to be put in charge of Egypt. Egypt. He's going to find himself in charge of everything. He's only going to answer to one person, and that person is Pharaoh, the king, the ruler, the monarch of the land of Egypt. And in that process, you got to know that you just don't plop down into that position. You have to be ready for it. You need to be groomed for it. And that was what Joseph was allowing to happen in his present circumstance. With Potiphar, he's in charge of a household. And then through no fault of his own, he ends up in prison, and he goes in charge from being in charge of a household to being in charge of an institution, a corporation, if you will. So he's moved from this much responsibility to this much responsibility. What God is doing is helping him with some management skills and some organizational abilities, the leadership and management and organizational tools that it will take to run all of Egypt have to be in place if that's what he's actually going to do. And so God is using the circumstance to prepare this young man, and he's putting more and more responsibility onto his shoulders to prepare him for all that's coming. Amazingly, he was groomed, and he was able to be groomed because he had determined that he would bloom where he was planted. And because of that, God was enabled to heap blessing upon Joseph, upon everything that surrounded him. Blessing from God just flows through this young man. Genesis 39, 5, Potiphar's house. From the time that Potiphar put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. It says everything he owned was blessed. Genesis 39, 23, here it is in jail. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Well, why could God use Joseph so powerfully? Here's why. He was consistent in his walk with God. God just knew who this kid was. He knew what he was about. He knew what he was going to do. He knew how he was going to respond. God could trust the response of this kid. And so because of that, God could bless him. He could have so easily spent his days bemoaning his circumstance, but you don't see that anywhere. No matter how life threw curveballs at him, he stood firm. Life plopped him down in the middle of troubling circumstances. For Joseph, it's no problem. He's made a determination. I will flourish here. He's an amazing example for all of us. And it leads to the second point that I want to put in front of you, the piece of the story that we're picking up this morning in Genesis chapter 40. And here it is, deja vu. Because what's happening right now is all of a sudden, Joseph is being inundated with a new set of dreams. So here's Joseph sitting in this jail cell, accused and found guilty of something that he's absolutely innocent of. And something from his past suddenly pops up. Dreams. Now, Joseph had this uncanny ability to be able to hear a dream, see a dream, and immediately understand exactly what it meant, to know what was going down. Have you ever wanted to have the ability to do that? Have you ever had just a really weird dream? And you wake up the next morning remembering it? I mean, a lot of us don't understand that we dream a lot. In fact, during the REM part of your sleep, rapid eye movement, lasts about 18 to 20%. That's when you dream. And typically we have 6, 7, 8 dreams a night that are flying through us. We don't remember most of them, but do you remember some of them? You wake up and it's like this weird thing went down and you're trying to figure out what it meant. You need some kind of interpreter you could explain it to so they could figure it out for you and tell you what it meant. A couple of months ago, I had a really, really, really weird dream. But it was one of those dreams that was really weird. You know what I mean? It's like it was real. It's like I found myself in the middle of this dream and I'm telling myself, is this a dream or is it real? And I'm telling myself, no, it's real. So in the middle of the night, I wake up. And when I wake up, I suddenly have a hankering for Krispy Kreme donuts. Like raspberry filled Krispy Kreme donuts. I'm laying in bed and I'm thinking, this is a craving that must be fulfilled. So I get up. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. I get up and I quietly go over and I start getting dressed. I'm quiet because I know if I wake Brenda up, Brenda's going to say, what in the world are you doing? I'm going to tell her I'm going to Krispy Kreme for a dozen raspberry filled. She's going to say, get back in bed. So I want to be really, really, really quiet. I get out of bed. I dress really quiet. I grab the keys, my wallet, and I sneak out, get in the car. I drive over to Krispy Kreme donuts and I get a dozen raspberry filled and I eat the whole thing. It's like a perfect dream, don't you think? And so then in my dream, what happens? I came home, I get back in bed, and an hour later, I'm waking up again for a hankering. I did it 4 times in the middle of the night. I woke up, and I was the happiest camper. It was the greatest night of sleep I've ever had. Here, have you ever had a really weird dream? A dream when you woke up saying, what in the world does that mean? Later on, you sit around with a group of friends going, here's my dream. What do you think it means? And just in case you're wondering, this is the deal. When it comes to Krispy Kreme donuts, there doesn't have to be a reason. That's reason enough. The dream is good enough, just how it stands. But if you ever had a dream and you didn't understand, that's when you need a guy like Joseph. He had a God-given ability to be able to see a circumstance through a dream and be able to tell you exactly what it meant. And now here he is in jail 11 years later. 11 years since his dreams, when his brothers were bowing down to him and his parents and his brothers were bowing down to him. Oh, it wasn't actually them. It was sheaves of grain. It was stars and the sun and the moon and the heavens in his dreams, but he knew what it meant. Here he is 11 years later and he's confronted with dreams. They're not his dreams. They're dreams that belong to a couple of men in the jail. The guys having the dreams were officials of Pharaoh. They were his cupbearer and the baker. They had been thrown into jail because somehow the text tells us, chapter 40 of Genesis, that they had offended Pharaoh. What they did, I have no idea, but it's a pretty steep punishment, don't you think, for some offense? Could you imagine if everybody who offended you wound up in jail, or if you wound up in jail every time you offended somebody? The text tells us they were there for some time. Chapter 40, verse 4. I don't think that means a few days. You see these guys being in jail weeks, maybe months, maybe even a year. Anyway, while they're in jail, they're put into the care of Joseph, under his care by the warden. And verse 6 tells us that after some time had passed, one morning, Joseph wakes up and he finds these two dejected. The question is, what's wrong? And these guys are immediately answering. Chapter 40, verse 8, they said, we had a dream and there's no one to interpret our dreams. Now, isn't God just like this? I mean, we move through life and we just seem to forget. We forget our gifts, forget our values, forget what it is that we bring to the table. Life gets busy, gets crazy. Sometimes it gets unjust. And before you know it, you've completely written off God's will, God's plan. I mean, it's easy to do. It's easy to get so caught up in the day-to-day issues and stuff of life that were moving outside and being taken away from seeing God's hand and seeing God's movement, hearing his voice. And then suddenly a reminder comes to you that causes you to turn your head and remember. A circumstance calls for you to take your gifts, take your talents, and put them to work. Something happens that forces you to remember what you're able to do, what you're good at, why God put you on this planet, what you should be about. For Joseph, it's been 11 years. And suddenly there's two guys in his presence, under his care, who are having dreams. And for Joseph, it's just like a smack, a kick right upside the head. His ability to understand dreams just floods right back at him. I love the simple response. They're saying, nobody can interpret our dreams. There's no hesitation from Joseph. Joseph, chapter 40, verse 8 says, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." And with that encouragement, they come right at him. It begins with the cupbearer. Chapter 40, verse 9, the cupbearer says, "In my dream, I saw a vine in front of me. And on the vine were three branches. And as soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup into the hand of Pharaoh." I mean, the words hardly get out of the cupbearer's mouth, and Joseph automatically, just intuitively, instinctively knows exactly what they mean. And the first thing that you see is Joseph speaking out. In fact, it's the very next verse. This is what it means. Chapter 40, verse 12. Joseph said, "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head, restore you to your position. You will put Pharaoh's cup into his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer." In other words, you're being restored to your position. It's all happening in 3 days. And with that being said, the baker's going, "This is great." And so now the baker's dream comes. It's interesting that when the baker hears the positive report coming back, because I don't think either one of them had figured that this is what it meant. The baker's now ready and quick to tell Joseph his dream. So he does. Chapter 40, verse 16. "I too had a dream. On my head were three baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating them out of the basket right off of my head." And again, Joseph didn't even hesitate. I mean, the dream's told. He immediately understands what it means. He says in verse 18, this is what it means. "The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head, and then he's going to hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat away your flesh." Happy day to you, huh? And just in case you're wondering, the text tells us that it came to pass exactly as Joseph had said it would, which should have given Joseph even more confidence in his ability and in the gifts that God had given him. It's been 11 years, and here he is, down probably in the dungeons under the castle. And just like that, God is reminding him of exactly who he is and exactly what he can do. But it seems from the story that he wasn't focusing on any of this. And that brings us to the third point, and that's opportunity. And it's right here for the first time, and really the only time in the story, we see Joseph taking matters into his own hands. Joseph saw all of this as an opportunity. As soon as he had interpreted the dream of the cupbearer, he cries out to the man. Here's what he says in Genesis 40, verse 14. "When all goes well with you, remember me. Show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh. Get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I've done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." What's going on here is Joseph is taking matters into his own hands, and he's working to get himself released. And he thought he had the golden opportunity. I've rubbed shoulders with the right guy. This guy is going to go stand back right next to Pharaoh. He's going to have Pharaoh's ear. When he's released, he'll sing my praise to Pharaoh. I'm going to encourage him to do that. Sing it. Please sing it. Because if you will tell him, I will get out of here. Joseph's thinking, I got an opportunity. I can make it happen. And friends, I'm just asking you, how often do we act just like this? Difficult circumstances hit our lives. And our first reaction is to try and turn them around. We take matters into our own hands. Have you ever done it? How often do you find yourself, when hard times smack up against your life, asking God, what do you want me to do here? Most of us, when we have those hard times, the answer is, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm working to seek a solution, trying to figure a way out of the mess. And oftentimes, those thoughts don't very much center on what God's will is. What God would have us think, what God would have us do, how God would have us respond. And I think we struggle with difficulty in our lives because of it. Why? Well, because, and I would encourage you, friends, to write this down. The purpose of our lives is to serve God's plan. The purpose of our lives is to serve God's plan. Would you say that with me? The purpose of our lives is to serve God's plan. Would you say it again? The purpose of our lives is to serve God's plan. Say it again. The purpose of our lives is to serve God's plan. Period. It's not about me. It's all about God. So when I work to take over and drive the situation to the place that I want to see it go, I'm not being sensitive to what God may want. The best thing that we can do in our lives is seek the Lord, seek His will. What is it that God would have me to do? Here I am. I'm in this circumstance. God, what do you want me to learn? Where do you want me to go? How do you want me to respond? What do you want me to say? What do you want me to think? How can I clearly see your heart, God, in my circumstance? Which leads to the fourth thought, is Joseph is madly now trying to work this opportunity to his advantage. The reality is devastation because nothing happened. Seriously, nothing. Joseph held these guys by taking care of them in the jail, and then when the dreams came along, he interpreted the dreams. You would think the cupbearer, maybe not so much the baker, but you would think the cupbearer would be eager to help Joseph out, but nothing happened, nothing. And in fact, if you're reading the story, it's like crickets. It's just nothing. And I'm sure Joseph maybe woke up on the third morning following the interpretation, and as he looks into the cell of the cupbearer and the baker, they're both gone, and Joseph's going, it's working, it's working, it's working. He's probably maybe springing around the jail a little bit saying, today is the day, today is the day, today is the day. He's going to talk to Pharaoh. I'm going to be restored. How long do you think he woke up hopeful? How long do you think it took for reality to set in? This is my lot. The guy didn't talk to Pharaoh. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. This is my lot in life. So what's the point? Here's the point. We need to wait on the Lord. We need to wait on the Lord. God really does have a plan. He really is in charge. He really is good at moving His plan. He really is capable of making the things that He wants to see happen, happen. But it's done in His timing. And that's why it is our job to wait on the Lord. Which is always an easy thing, right? It leads to the last point I want to put in front of you, friends, and that's just talking about teachable moments, which is this moment for all of us, a teachable moment. How do you wait upon the Lord? When it comes to our own personal walk with the Lord, this really is a big issue for most of us. The Christian life really is about seeking God's way, seeking God's plan, seeking God's delight, and being patient enough to wait for God to move. So how do you do that? Well, it begins with a key thought, a key word. And the key word is trust. The question is, do you trust God? Do you trust that He is good? Do you trust that He is out for your best? Do you trust that He has a plan for your life? See, if you don't trust those things, you're never going to be able to put yourself into God's hands. You're never going to be able to wait on God's timing. So how do you develop this trust that it takes to wait on the Lord? And that's an important question. Let me give you a couple of thoughts in how to develop this trust. First, I would encourage you to be quick. Always be quick to look back. Be quick to look back and take an inventory. Take an inventory of your life, because hindsight is always 20/20. I mean, this is that whole poem, Footsteps in the Sand. You've probably read it, probably seen it on the internet. The guy that dies, he's going to heaven, and Jesus is with him, and he's looking back over his life, and all through his life he sees two sets of footprints, and he's asking Jesus, what is that? And Jesus says, oh, those are the times when you and I were just walking really close together. And then he's looking, there are times when there's just one set of footprints, and he's asking Jesus, you know, I'm noticing that all these times that there's one set of footprints, that's a time when my life was really difficult, when it was really hard. Why did you leave me when things got hard? And Jesus says to the man, I didn't leave you when things got hard. When things got hard, those were the times when I picked you up and carried you. There's only one set of footprints because they're mine. Now the question is that true? Has God been faithful to you? In those very troubling times in your past, has he been willing to pick you up and to carry you? Now, the answer to that is truly yes. We've all had times when life was pretty tough, and in those times, God was faithful to do what he said he would do. Do you recognize it as such? A few years ago, one of our twins, Gregory, was moving to Florida. He moved there to work on a couple of graduate degrees in music performance, one in jazz, one in classical. It was a lot to bite off. He was the first student in the history of Florida State to not only be accepted into two disciplines for performance degrees, jazz and classical, but to be simultaneously working on both of them. Now, there's a reason why he was the first student. It's because either one of these degrees was impossibly hard, and most players can maybe play one discipline but can't play two. He happened to be talented enough to be able to do both and be accepted into both programs. But the bigger picture is, not only was it impossibly hard to be able to do both these things, the bigger deal was even a financial issue. The education was daunting. The financial aspect was equally daunting. In fact, it was overwhelming. The education was going to be expensive, $30,000 a year for tuition and fees and books. That didn't include housing expense. And when he moved to Florida, he didn't have a scholarship. The workload in one of those degrees forced students to take out loans. In fact, that's what all the professors said. You cannot do this and work at the same time. You must not get a job. You must just take more of a loan. And so all the students are taking loans. Gregory's working on two degrees, and both professors are harping at him saying, take out a loan, take out a loan, take out a loan. What it was going to mean is like $180,000 or $190,000 in loans over the next 4 years. But we had taught him differently. We'd said, don't do that. That debt's going to be a killer. It will weigh you down for the next 30 or 40 years of your life. So instead of taking a job and instead of taking a loan, Gregory took a job waiting tables. And I'm telling you, it was tough going. It was going to be a grueling 4 years. But we all truly believed that Gregory was supposed to be there. And so the doors had opened up in miraculous ways. It was a highly regarded school with professors that he had wanted to study under. You know, he moved, and let me tell you, the first couple of months were really, really, really tough. He was eating through his savings. Deposits on an apartment, monthly expenses, tuition bills, paying for the fees and the books, paying for lessons, setting up housekeeping, furniture, a bed, pots, pans. There were a few moments when he was thinking it was all bad. And I mean, during those times, he's calling me on the phone, like kind of like, it's not working, it's working, it's not working, it's not working, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Thinking maybe what I need to do is just quit school and move back home to Illinois. And really wondering, where is God in all of this? And that's when Brenda and I encouraged him to look back. Look back. Take time, sit down, look back. Look back over your life, and here's the question. Has God been faithful? Has God taken care of you? Has God taken care of your needs? When you were at a point where you really believed that you needed to move out of your advanced saxophone and you needed to move to a professional model saxophone, which was going to cost $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. We didn't have that money to do that, but did it happen? Was it provided? When your car has broken down, has there been money to take care of it? Has God provided? The question was really, has God ever left you high and dry? And when Gregory looked back over his life, looking at those sets of footsteps, the answer was no. Or there were times when he was maybe stepping outside of God's will that there were some tense moments, but every time Gregory was in the middle of God's will, walking in God's way, it was all working. And I'm telling you, it's a good habit to get into. When you're facing really tough times, when you're ready to throw in the towel, don't. Wait on the Lord. And as you're waiting, stop, turn back, look back, and survey your life. Survey where you've been. Survey especially those trouble spots. And here's the question. Has God been faithful? Did he see me through? Is God good for what he said he would do? And the answer will come back as yes. It leads to a second thought. How do you develop trust to wait on the Lord? Once you've looked back and you've got some hindsight and perspective of how God has taken care of you, then allow the past to influence the present. In other words, if God has been faithful, then trust that he will continue to be faithful. What I mean here is that you need to allow the past to define the present situation. If God has been faithful in the past, the question is, will he continue to do that? God is always faithful. He can always be trusted. I'll never forget the day when Gregory called me on the phone. And I picked up the phone, I said, hey, bud. And I mean, before I could even get the words out, he was like almost screaming through the phone, it's working, it's working, it's working. He had been to work the night before. He had got his tips. He had brought them all home. He had got his bills. He got out his cash. He had paid all of his bills, every single one of them. And just as a side comment here, let me tell you that Brenda and I had trained him always. You begin with a tithe. You have a pot of money. The first tenth at least goes to the Lord. And so that's what he did. He would come home every night from the restaurant. He would take his tips, $60, $80, $150, and he'd take off that money, that at least the tithe, and he would put it into a jar. He'd put that lid on the jar, and that was God's money. And that, I mean, can you imagine how tempting it would be to take money out of that and put it into his bills? But he was determined to not do that. He would do this, and then every week he would put that into an envelope, and he would seal it up, and he'd put a number on it. He'd take it to church, and he'd put it in the plate. And it added up to a lot of money. $300, $400, $500 a month was going into that envelope and going to the church. And now here we are, 6, 8 weeks into this thing, when he's thinking the world is falling in, that it's all bad, and suddenly every bill he had was paid. God was faithful. So here's Gregory calling me saying, it's working. So my encouragement to Gregory was to buy a notebook and write this down. Write it down. Write down the events. Write down your fears. Write down what happened. Write down the positive way that you stayed in God's will. Write that all down. Write it down. Because there's going to come a point in a year, two, or four when it's going to feel like the sky is falling again. And you need to remind yourself by looking back that God has been faithful. So write these things down. And I would encourage you to do the exact same thing. Those big issue, problem, trials in your life, write them down and write down what happened and write down how God picked you up and how God carried you and how God moved you through. Because here's the question. Is God faithful? The answer is yes. Will he carry me? Yes. Is he trustworthy? The answer is yes. How do you develop the ability to wait upon God and on his timing? You look back and remember that and allow that to take you right here in this present circumstance to say, if he did it there, he will do it now. And while you're waiting, let me encourage you with two more thoughts. Letter C begins with to not be disappointed when it doesn't go the way you think it should go. Now, I know that's easier said than done, but it's a point that we all need to consider. Whenever I get to a point of pain it's easy for me to say, this is the path to get through it, and then begin to work the plan. But my plan is not necessarily God's plan. Joseph got to this point. When the cupbearer's dream was interpreted for him, Joseph took the opportunity to cry out to the guy. I've been falsely accused. I shouldn't be here. I was stolen from my home. I'm innocent of all charges. You're going to stand before Pharaoh. You've got to plead my case, plead my cause. Get me out of here. And here's how chapter 41 opens. When 2 full years had passed. 2 full years. The dreams come. Joseph is 28 years of age. Opportunity is knocking. Get me out of here. 2 full years pass. Nothing goes on. But here's what I would encourage you to do. When you read this, keep on reading. Because here's what it says. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. The verse is a clear statement that God is at work. It wasn't Joseph's timetable, but God had taken all of the really wicked circumstances in Joseph's life, and he's getting ready to use them in a powerful way for the purpose of his kingdom. Do you see this? The cupbearer's tripping out of jail. He's so excited, and now he's back to where he belongs. But Pharaoh's not ready to hear this yet. If the cupbearer had come in and said, hey, Pharaoh, thanks for getting me out of here. Now let me tell you, there's a bunch of guys down there that deserve it, but there's one guy who's completely innocent and you got to get him out. Would Pharaoh have listened to any of that? No. It would have been a deaf ear. But now, 2 years later, Pharaoh's having a dream. And if you keep reading, there's nobody in his kingdom who can tell him what the dreams mean. And so this is the moment when the cupbearer says, there is a guy. I know a guy. See, Joseph's timetable was not necessarily God's timetable. God is moving. He's developing in Joseph the tools and the abilities to be able to do what he's getting ready to call him to do, which is to serve, administrate, organize this entire kingdom. Joseph is going to have some pretty wide abilities to be able to accomplish that. It was all in preparation for what was coming. God was using the circumstance to take Joseph's gifts and abilities and ready the man for his ultimate purpose. Listen, friends, I would encourage you to know that the best place to be is right in the middle of God's will. Our lives should not be about seeking our will and our pleasure. Our lives should be about saying, Lord, what is it that you would have me do? How have you gifted me? How have you wired me? How have you enabled me to serve you, to make a difference for you? And if you think about it, Jesus taught us the exact same thing in the Lord's Prayer, our Father in heaven. Hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Your what? Your will be done. Not mine. Your kingdom, your will. Not may my kingdom come, may my will be done. No. And then Jesus modeled it in his own life. He's in Gethsemane. He's hours away from being arrested. And he's at a rock and he's dripping drops of blood. He's sweating. He's under so much stress and pain. And here's what he says, I don't want to do this, Lord. My plan is something else. Find a different way, but not what I will, but what you will. Here's the truth. God has a plan. And if you allow him to, he will use you to help accomplish his plan. But it's in his timing, in his purpose, for his name's sake. Here's my question. Are you allowing it to happen? It It happens as we make a determination to sit back and wait on the Lord. Hey, bow your heads. Would you do that? And friends, let me just ask you, what is it today that is troubling you? What is it today that is in your life that is painful and hard? What is it that you are seeking a solution for? Have you thought about saying, maybe what I need to do is hand all of this over to God? Are you remaining faithful to Him in this moment of waiting? Are you continuing, like Joseph, to be a person of integrity and do the things that God has called you to do, to be the person that He's called you to be? Even when it doesn't make sense, even when it's hard, even when you want to take it all into your own hands and do it your own way. Listen, friends, I would suggest to every one of us here that it's time that we get on our knees and we pray that prayer of Jesus. May your kingdom come, may your will be done on earth, here, in my life, as it is in heaven. I'd suggest to you that we all need to refuse to trust ourselves, our wisdom, our feelings, and to say that there's only one person that we're going to trust, and that would be God. I choose to trust you, Lord. I choose to follow you. So, Lord, my prayer today is move. Go where you would want to go. Do what you would want to do. And I will follow you. May your kingdom come. May your will be done. Oh, Father, help us to be those people. Quick. Quick to trust. Quick to move. Quick to believe. Quick to rely all on you. And Father, may you move in powerful ways in us individually and in us corporately in this place, in this church. Help us, Father, to be your people. And we lift it up in the name of the one that we love. His name is Jesus. And God's people said,